Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu.
With a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening. Our reading this morning comes from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 6, starting at verse 17. Jesus came down with them and stood on a level place with a great crowd of his disciples and a great multitude of people from all Judea, Jerusalem, and the coast of Tyre and Sidon. They had come to hear Jesus and to be healed of their diseases, and those who were troubled with unclean spirits were cured. And all in the crowd were trying to touch him, for power came out from him and healed all of them. And then Jesus looked up at his disciples and said, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who are hungry now, for you will be filled. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you and when they exclude you, revile you, and defame you on account of the Son of Humanity. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy, for surely your reward is great in heaven. For that is what their ancestors did to the prophets. But woe to you who are rich, for you've received your consolation. Woe to you who are full now, for you will be hungry. Woe to you who are laughing now, for you will mourn and weep. Woe to you when all speak well of you, for that is what their ancestors did to the false prophets."
No, love is never too far off. Give a little love. Give a little love. Give a little love. Give a little love. Yeah, give a little
here. Remaining calm. I want to tell you a little something about my house, my home. In our home, there are many cookbooks. Yeah, that's just two shelves. Yeah. The one I appreciate the most is by Alice Waters, and it's called The Art of Simple Food, which lays out a series of guidelines or lessons for cooking. And in the introduction, this is what she writes. "This book is for everyone who wants to learn to cook or to become a better cook. By cooking your way through these lessons, tasting and learning from your successes and your mistakes, you'll get to know some fundamental techniques by heart, and you won't have to look them up again. This will enable you to cook," she says, "with ease and confidence, inspired by recipes, rather than being ruled by them. And free to enjoy the sheer pleasure of preparing and sharing simple food." Well, our hope for this worship series on craft faith is that people will be so enticed and enamored and curious and interested in finding the places and flavors in which God's story becomes your own, that you will be able to witness with ease and confidence, inspired my recipes or directions, rather than being ruled by them, so that the love of God is shared by all of us, and from that the world will be transformed. So one of the ways we wanted to inspire, entice, and maybe instruct all of us is to get some help from our musicians this morning. Matt and I and Brendan chose a song. Not just any song, but a really old hymn about God's way of loving. And it's called What Wondrous Love Is This? You may have heard of it. There is, after research, there's no composer that's ever been attributed to this song. It's been shared and shaped through the ages, with the very oldest version dating all the way back where they found it in print for, they think, the first time, 1811. Back then it had 6 verses. There are hints from folk song collectors. I'm nerding out here, just so you know, because these are important facts. That this song came from an old English ballad called Captain Kidd. Well, who was Captain Kidd? Robert Kidd was a pirate. See? Isn't that shocking? He was a pirate, and he was executed. All right? He was executed in 1701. So this suggests an oral tradition of spoken word back, way back then, that became attached to a tune that was probably being sung in public places, bars, okay? The earliest written form then in a bound hymnal is 1840. And in our own hymnal, which are in the pews, it's number 292, and it only has 4 verses. And then in our hymnal, a phrase was changed to be more in tune with God's grace, because that's what Methodists are in tune with, God's grace. You'll notice that the phrase, what wondrous love is this, might like capture your attention right away, because it's a simple phrase, but it's persistent in the song. You would never talk this way, but it's said 3 times in a row. We wouldn't talk that way. And the question becomes, is it a question, what wondrous love is this? Or is it an expression of discovery? What wondrous love is this? Whatever the source, the song has endured. And so the 3 of us chose it. But how are we going to sing it here in the room? And that's the question we ask Brendan every week. Brendan, how can we sing this? Can I say it? Make it not suck. And every week, he and our amazing team of musicians are inspired by the recipes that get handed down or over or across to us. And as we all, I hope, experience, they don't get ruled by them. So this week, we thought we would open up the process so all of you could actually learn more about what it looks like and feels like to take a recipe and be inspired instead of ruled. And Brendan's going to start, and we have no idea what's going to happen next. So I'm really comfortable right now. Brendan.
Hi. You guys have never heard me speak before a lot of years. So you're probably like, oh, that's what he sounds like. So we're going to do the tune originally as it is one time through, and then I'm going to direct the band for my arrangement, and then we'll do it another time through, and then we're going to take turns arranging the song. So Joe will do the 3rd one, and Tim is going to do the 4th arrangement.
Just so you know, we have no idea what's happening.
Yes,
up here.
They don't know the arrangement I'm going to give them at all. They haven't heard it or anything.
Hey, Omari, how's it going?
I'm okay.
Thank you.
What wondrous love is this, O my soul, O my soul? What wondrous love is this, O my soul? What wondrous love is this? There.
for my soul to bear the dreadful curse for my soul.
That was all right, you know. I don't prefer that type of hymn, so. Okay, here we go. So I want to do a 12-8 feel. Doom, doom, bat, doom, doom, donk, doom. And then, Ben, if you can start. So, doom, doom, doom.
What wondrous love is this, oh my soul, oh my soul. What wondrous love is this, oh my soul. What wondrous love is this that caused the Lord of life to lay aside his crown for my soul.
All right, we're going to start with the voices and just go with oh my soul, that measure, pick up to measure four. Is that right?
Oh, three. My soul.
So, oh
my soul, oh my soul, oh my soul.
This room, my soul, oh my soul,
oh my soul, oh my soul.
This little light of mine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine, 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 one more time. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
Oh my soul, 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 oh my soul. Okay,
the drummer gets to try. So I think most people expect me always to do arrangements of like epic drum solos, but I don't actually ever do that. My arranging side is different than that. So usually, since we have these cool stringed instruments, I'd like to use those. So can we try it, Joe and.
From death, I'm free. I'll sing on,
and when from death, I'm free, I'll sing.
You want to sit down? Y'all can sit down. The lyrics and music passed down through the generations. They guide our musicians. And then they show it to us. They show us what it looks like to be inspired but not ruled by a recipe in real time. Blessed are those who keep the music alive from generation to generation. Woe to those who make it suck. It's not written in there. I have to say it. I mean, really. Yeah. This week we're staying in the Gospel of Luke. And what's unique about this right now is that this version of the Beatitudes is rarely shared in churches just because of the way the calendar falls. The Beatitudes themselves are an ancient recipe passed down from Jesus in hopes of inspiring those of us with ears to hear. And what we heard Matt read is considered the most primitive versions because Luke's gospel is written for the poor. So scholars say he leaves the hard words of Jesus, the writer of Luke does, just as they were originally spoken. And so I'm going to rearrange the first two a little bit to help us hear the blessings and the woes side by side. Luke's version is uncomfortable for most of us. And that's why, actually, Matthew's version is a lot more well-known. Because right from the start, Matthew softens it and doesn't say, blessed are you who are poor. Matthew says, poor in spirit, yeah. Right? Luke calls us to recognize that Jesus really meant the poor. And blessed, which the word is makarios, it doesn't simply describe a state of happiness or bliss. Rather, it refers in a theological sense to one's standing before God. The poor in Luke are those whose desperate need and inability to help themselves has driven them to turn to God for hope. And from that location, they stand before God and they get called blessed. Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. But woe to you who are rich, for you have received your consolation. Blessed are you who are hungry now, for you will be filled. And woe to you who are full now, for you will be hungry. See, because really we are not poor, Luke's Beatitudes mystify us or leave us feeling kind of guilty instead of inspired. And it's the lesson maybe you remember of the rich young ruler who comes to Jesus and says, what do I have to do? I've done everything. And Jesus says, you have to sell everything you own. And he goes away in sorrow because he's weighed down by his possessions. See, our pride and our ability to provide for ourselves all on our own end up blocking God's blessing for us. And that's the kind of realization or aha moment that calls us to repentance and a reordering of the priorities of our lives. A reordering that hopefully, though, calls us to be inspired instead of trying desperately to hold hard and fast to rules, you know, to rules. In addition, I want us to notice in these that Matt read for us that Jesus delivers all of this as he stands with the disciples on a level place. See, they call this the Sermon on the Plain instead of the Sermon on the Mount for that reason. The geographical setting has a very particular function in the Gospel of Luke. That word level or plain refers to places of corpses, disgraced people, where there is idolatry and suffering and misery and hunger and annihilation and deep mourning. So maybe, according to Luke, location is part of the recipe. Not just any location, but ones we might call places of nowhere, in which the suffering is often either overlooked, ignored, or maybe even considered invisible. See, Jesus teaches that the establishment of the realm of God will be in the midst of the world being made into a level place. Do you remember from Isaiah 40 where it says, "Every valley shall be lifted up, and every mountain and hill made low. The uneven ground shall become level, and the rough places a plain." To be sure, the prophets of Isaiah of old imagine God renewing those level places eventually, and in the Beatitudes, it's clear that Jesus does too. So I wonder what that might look like for all of us today. Well, clearly we saw it just now in a glimpse with our musicians. Because usually they're up here in front of us all confident, or for the most part that's how it comes, right? But they were on a level place with us for a while. It's risky. Inspiration instead of rules. In our work with Princeton for the birth of a youth ministry here at the table, this last week, we do coursework online, and we were asked to share an image of a location. They asked us to share, what does nowhere look like? And one person posted this photo. It's a community of unhoused people near the railroad tracks along the river in Sacramento. And this person wondered, how might ministry with young people join with God and people who are already currently unhoused to create a more beautiful, loving, safe way for people to find shelter together? This seems like a location that God would renew. Blessed are those whose hands are empty, for God gives the realm to you. Woe to the powerful, they've already gained what they sought. Those whose hands are full cannot. This week, a small group of us visited Women's Empowerment. It's an organization that was the recipient of our Christmas offering here from the table. The mission of Women's Empowerment is to educate and empower women who are homeless, unhoused, with the skills and confidence that's necessary for them to get a job, maintain a healthy life, regain a home for themselves and often for their children. Women's Empowerment's recipe calls for a cohort of women to spend 9 weeks together, Monday through Friday, completing coursework in classes and workshops, one-on-one mentoring and counseling. And I confess I had my own idea going in for our tour about what this recipe would yield. And it didn't include this. One graduate of the program, who I'm going to call Kathy, spent 22 months living in her RAV4. She shared a part of her story with us. Kathy's been employed for a year now. She has a place to live in a rooming house. Stacking rocks in the entry garden to Women's Empowerment began for her as a way of coping with her depression, anxiety, and trauma, as she learned mindfulness meditation in one of those daily classes. Now she teaches others how to do it. And one woman who was part of another cohort years after her tracked Kathy down to tell her that she tried this with her son, from whom she had been estranged for a very long time. He came for a visit and she didn't know what to do with him because they were barely speaking. So she decided to take him down to the Sacramento River just for a walk. She said they didn't look at each other. They stared out across the river. And the mom said to him, "I can't do a lot yet. Don't have a place to live yet, but I can do this now." So she began stacking rocks along the edge of the river. And he watched, and then he began to do the same. And they sat on that level place, stacking, not talking. over time, they've come to a way of forgiveness and love that can be talked about. But what was amazing to me was that Kathy said, you know, I was broken. And this place, Women's Empowerment, helped me to become whole again. I never thought anyone would ever listen to me, let alone learn anything about anything that I would do in the world. So now I come back here on my day off to keep the rocks stacked and to create words of inspiration. This seems like a location that God is renewing. Blessed are those who are discouraged or afraid, or those who are forgotten, who think they don't matter, who are no one at all. You are blessed because God blesses you. Woe to those who try to convince you otherwise. Luke has Jesus standing in a broken yet level world and teaching the way of love in order to upend things so that the poor walk away full and the rich empty-handed. Blessings and woes, places God renews. Inspiration, not rules. Nadia Bowles-Weber says, Jesus was God's beatitude, God's blessing to the weak in a world that admires only the strong. Luke is written for those earliest radical, ragtag, bottom of the heap followers of Jesus, the ones coming to find physical healing, not ones who have the luxury of being in a heady discussion, testing him back and forth. Turns out that the poor and the hungry know the reality of their own lives, that they are totally dependent on God, and therefore they are most likely to trust God, which is the foundation of grace, after all. Trusting God. The writer of Luke understands how those of us who are rich are more likely to take comfort in our own resources instead of exercising that trust in God's wondrous love. See, for Jesus, the issue is one's relationship to God and God's kingdom. And in Luke's gospel, Jesus gives his enlistment speech for those who want to follow him. It's a wonderful combination, these beatitudes and woes, of promise, promises fulfilled, promises still yet to come, and of marching orders. God renewing, a recipe of blessings and woes. See, God gets inspired, I think, by our locations and not ruled by them. Did you notice how each time when those musicians of ours were playing, a different person started a new verse? One person took the lead. The others had to listen, pay attention, begin to make their own choices. They had to figure out how they were going to be in it with the leader differently. For this to work, they have to trust themselves. They have to trust each other as they forge new ways over and over again. To me, it means these musicians go in with each other all the way, all the time, every time. And through the recipe of the Beatitudes and the woes, God reminds us that we too need to empty ourselves, turn away from our ways of the world, and then go all in, listening, trusting God to create a faith of wondrous love. It's God's recipe for renewal. One theologian I read this week said it like this: our God is the God of those who have nothing but God. That actually includes us too. Whew. Even if our need of God is masked in part by our comparative prosperity. In the final analysis, we are as naked as the poorest of the poor, and our possessions are no tabernacle for for everlasting. To quote and paraphrase the great prophet Johnny Cash, we must not be so heavenly minded that we are of no earthly use. And conversely, we must not be of such earthly use that we are no longer heavenly minded. Right at the beginning of the journey of discipleship, Jesus tells the truth plainly of what faithful living is going to be like. And we cannot say after today that we have not been plainly advised. I think Jesus is saying we cannot allow God into some little parts of our lives and exclude God from others. The invitation is to fold all in. Christian faith has been crafted by theologians, musicians, rural church folks, city dwellers through the ages. And it evolves, just like you witnessed with our musicians this morning. Like you know it works with chefs who are guided and not bound. Like empowered women who are healed and go on to teach and mentor. Like disciples who are learning from Jesus. At the same time, they sort of think they already have it all figured out. So, may the Beatitudes and the woes be for us this morning Luke's version of the art of simple faith, in which he lays out foundational recipes for us, blessings and woes, for everyone who wants to learn to craft their faith, or maybe just to become a little bit better at what you probably already know.